How are you this morning? So this is the, somebody mentioned to me that this was the committee of weather extremes. So we had the blizzard. Seemed like the heating up of the planet occurred during our last meeting, and now we have the rains. So we've covered the spectrum. But welcome to this meeting of the Prioritization Advisory Committee. And our objectives for this meeting are to set a context for and explain the proposed process of the work ahead, to identify key issues that exist, to prioritize a consolidated list of gap domains and subdomains, and set up next steps. So that's what we're hoping to achieve over our time together today. We will start with a couple of, I think we're going to start with a couple of things here. First of all, if you'd all turn your name tag slightly toward me, it will help me remember your names. Since I'm aging and even with familiar people sometimes forget or have trouble bringing a name to mind, that will help me a great deal. Thank you very much. I think this would be a really good time for Nalini, you to talk about the logistics and some of the things to remember.
Sure.
The main one being that we're in a law office surrounding us here. So we want to make sure the doors are kept closed. And if somebody has to step out to make a phone call, if you'd go into the main lobby, not make it wander the halls here, that will be very, very much appreciated by the law firm if we try to be a quiet guest in amongst their midst, that would help them a great deal. But could you tell us some of the other logistical things? Then what we're going to do is we're going to go to introductions and conflict of disclosure at the same time. But Nalini, why don't you remind us of the other things we need to
Thanks, George, and welcome everyone. A couple key logistics. The bathrooms are in the hallway near the elevators. The doors of the conference room, as George mentioned, need to be closed. We also have a meeting room where the food for the breakfast was that could be used for private calls if folks need to make a quick call. A couple additional logistics. We have Sarah Lash, who's new to our project team, who's sitting down there next to Karen. She'll be manning the phones and emailing folks who are on the phone with different documents and logistics with regard to voting for committee members. We also have Edison Machado, who's down towards that end, and he will be typing up the key issues and the voting results real time, so we'll be able to provide those as we vote. And both Sarah and Edison have been terrific in supporting this project, along with Deanna Taylor, who's behind me right here. And she has been providing tremendous admin support on this project. With that, I'll turn it over to Ann Hammersmith, our general counsel, who will be providing the non-disclosures and conflict of interest.
I just want to make sure that I mentioned before you start, Ann, that Ellen's not with us this morning. At the last minute, she's had significant illness among some of her relatives, which keep her away. So I'm filling in for her half of this, but she's with us in spirit and wishes us well. And actually, I understand, may try to join us by phone, but I hope she doesn't. I hope she pays attention to her family. So anyway, I wanted you all to be aware of that.
Good morning, everyone. If you recall, at the last meeting, we did a conflict of interest disclosure. What we're going to do today is go around the table, have you introduce yourselves. If you did not disclose at the last meeting, if you weren't attending, if you could do a full disclosure. If you were at the last meeting and did the disclosure, you just need to say if you have any updates or not. So let's start at the end of the table next to Tom. Sorry, caught you off guard.
Yeah, good morning. Dale Brantzler, the Oklahoma Foundation for Medical Quality, and I have no changes.
Carrie Cotterill, Kaiser Permanente Pharmacy Operations in California. I have no changes.
John Deere, Golden Living. I have no changes.
Kent Bottles, independent healthcare consultant from Philadelphia. No changes.
Lynn Feinberg with the National Partnership for Women and Families. No changes.
Chesley Richards, CDC. No changes.
Hi, Dr. Fred Jacobs, St. Barnabas Healthcare System. I have no changes.
Walt Biffle from Denver Health Medical Center and University of Colorado. I have no changes.
Did you disclose last time?
I believe.
Were you here?
In February, not June.
Okay.
I'm Gareth Parry from Institute of Healthcare Improvement. I have no changes.
Alyssa Keefe with the Hospital Quality Alliance. I have no changes.
Anna Falliers with General Electric. I have no changes.
Nikki Highsmith, Center for Healthcare Strategies. No changes.
Ira Moskowitz, School of Public Health, University of Minnesota. No changes.
And I'm George Isham, your chair and co-chair and chief health officer at Health Partners. No changes.
Is there anyone on the phone? Who's on the phone, please?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Hello?
Yes?
Hi, this is Christina Bethel, a child medalist in Health Measurement Initiative, and I don't have any changes.
Okay, thank you.
This is Madhavi Vimaretti, Chief Medical Officer of Active Health, and I don't have any changes.
Okay, is there anyone else on the phone? Okay, thank you. Do any of you have any questions of each other or for me? All right, thank you very much.
I wonder if all of your introductions and disclosures are as uneventful as that one. Well, thank you for helping us with that task. So at this point, we want to look at our charge, remind us of where we are with the committee charge. And I guess I'm supposed to be looking at a couple of slides here. Where are we? Slide one. Okay, let's go to the second one. The charge of the Measure Prioritization Committee is to determine the priorities for a measurement development agenda to address identified gapped and endorsed measures. And obviously this is, I think, very important work. It's not really been done systematically as systematically as we have been going through it. And I think we all realize as we've gone through this that this will be the products that we're producing will be very, very important to the measurement development going forward. So very important charge, very important task that we have in terms of quality improvement and quality measurement agenda for the country. For the next slide. Our objectives for the meeting are to set a context for and explain the proposed process for the work ahead, identify key issues, prioritize a consolidated list of gap domains and subdomains, and then obviously indicate where we're going next. So at that point, we're ready for background and context setting on slide four. And I think that we have the opportunity to hear from Janet. It's always a pleasure to have you with us and to make sure that we have the appropriate context and enlightenment and any other wisdom that you wish to share with us, given your ride in through the flooding.
It was quite a challenging morning.
But again, thank you so much for being with us and enlighten us.
Well, thank you, George. I'll certainly try to live up to the task, but I... As George indicated, it was a challenging day getting in here. I think those of you who came from out of town probably had it a lot easier than some of the locals. And about half of the major arteries into D.C. are flooded out this morning, so it was interesting. But glad to be here. I want to thank George and Ellen in her absence for their continued leadership for this group. It's critically important work that you are doing. And your strong leadership is much appreciated and needed. Also want to thank all of you for your continued commitment to moving this process forward. The work you're doing really couldn't be any more important than it is right now at this particular juncture. All of the work that is happening in the federal government and elsewhere, both related to ARRA, the HIT legislation, and to ACA, the health reform legislation, really requires a robust set of performance measures.
whether it's for meaningful use purposes on the HIT side or whether it's for the various new and emerging payment programs that we expect to come out of the Innovation Center at HHS. And I think we will see a flowering of innovation on the payment side. We've also got very, very strong mandates ahead to expand public reporting programs for virtually all types of healthcare entities and professionals. So that's another area that can only move forward if we have performance measures. And it's kind of an interesting time for those of us at the National Quality Forum because on the one hand, we frequently hear from the provider side that we're have too many measures. We've got hundreds and hundreds of measures, and there's simply too many that it can't be possibly implemented. On the other hand, we hear on almost a daily basis from those who are involved in the development of new payment programs or the meaningful use identification of measures for meaningful use for 2013 that we don't have the right measures. We don't have measures that set the bar high enough. We don't have the measures that are going to really drive the kind of transformation of the delivery system that we all want to happen over the next 5 years. So we're really looking to this group to put that agenda together that will have the right measures. It will plug gaps as well, and we know what some of those are, whether they're outcome measures or functional use measures or measures of patient engagement and decision-making. I think we know where some of the major gaps are, measures of care coordination. But we're also really looking for the kinds of measures that will set the bar at that level, that it drives the kind of very fundamental change that's needed in the healthcare delivery system if we're going to achieve, I think, all of those goals and objectives that are laid out in the health reform package. So the work that you're doing is critically important, and it also is work that we need to move forward with very expeditiously because the demand for these new types of measures is here now, and it takes quite a while to develop measures, to adequately test measures, to move them through the endorsement process. Not a long, long time, but it does take a reasonable amount of time, and it's critical that we have adequate time to go through those steps so that we do them well and we get the right kind of measures that will perform as we want when they get out in the field. So I encourage you to move forward with this expeditiously, as I know you are, and come up with the best agenda that you possibly can so we can get the developmental work underway as soon as possible. Thanks much.
Questions or comments for Janet? I have one. Tom and I are actually talking ahead of time about some of the challenges associated with some of the new paradigms that are being raised by some developments. Really crystallized for me in three separate events in Minnesota. One, a conversation with a pulmonary expert at Mayo who really talked about how, in his opinion, the measures for asthma and pulmonary disease really aren't moving the field forward and really aren't addressing quality concerns, the existing ones, and really raising the issue of a more complex, the need for a complex series of measures, not a complex series, but a PHQ-9 questionnaire kind of functional assessment of pulmonary disease and how that would be useful, particularly if it was embedded in an automated medical record system at the point of care and in workflows. The second event is a conversation that we've had with David Eddy and the folks at Archimedes in terms of those sophisticated algorithms for automated medical records and that they're testing at Kaiser. And how that will actually outperform existing guidelines and quality measures. And it's not simply. And then the third is grants that we have received at Health Partners and our Research Foundation, $3.5 million grant from NIH to really look at, again, decision support, developing decision support for cardiovascular disease. And again, so these are paradigm changes from the existing way we're filling out the measurement framework. They're complex measures. They're really not. They're both measures and guidelines and workflow all at the same time. And I'm just curious, as our work has been driven by deadlines and we need to produce results and so forth, and we're doing that, and we're doing a great job as a committee filling out the gaps that we currently exist. But My question, you know, embedded in all of that would be, is NQF really thinking about how we take on thinking about these paradigm changes in the way we'd look at it, you know, sort of a bigger scale gap to be filled or a multi-level sort of set of measures which would allow practices and doctors that aren't ready for that level of sophistication perform against current measures and other systems where records are being implemented to begin to have some, you know, standards or push in that direction. I hope my comments are complete.
No, it's a great comment. We're very, very much aware and thinking a lot about the implications of the new electronic highway and what it will enable us to do. In fact, our Health Information Technology Advisory Committee just had a meeting a couple of weeks ago to begin to lay out a model for thinking about measurement in a world where you have both electronic health records and personal health records, or at least a variety of ongoing mechanisms for gathering information directly from patients about functional status, about engagement and decision-making, about compliance with treatment plans, but to try to move in some ways a bit away from what is right now a very clinician-provider-centric model of measurement. And as we begin to move into that new electronic highway, and I think this is thinking is really just beginning to be a part of ONC's activities as well, which isn't to say that they haven't thought about it all along, but in many ways their focus, initial focus, had to be on electronic health records, which are very provider-driven. But we really do need to be thinking all the time about the kind of electronic platform, what it will enable as we go forward. And as we begin to get patients engaged in providing us with information about functional status, and as we begin to get an electronic highway that allows us to look longitudinally across the complete patient episode, it does open up a whole new world. And that's the world that you need to be thinking about when you're coming up with your measure agenda, not the world that we're coming from. We're also working on the assumption at NQF that communities are going to migrate to that sort of a new world at different paces, and we're going to have a portfolio of measures that meets multiple needs and allows those who may not be as far along that trajectory to also engage and continue to move forward, but also supplies the kinds of very challenging and complex measures that some of the communities that really have been pioneers in this area would find to be very useful in their efforts as well. Now, NQF doesn't determine what measures will be used by different groups, so in many ways our challenge is to anticipate what others are going to want and what are going to be needed by new payment programs, by communities at the cutting edge, by health systems, more clinically integrated health systems that have the capability to look longitudinally, to measure outcomes, and to use complex measure sets and composite measures, and ones that set the bar a whole lot higher than I think our current set of measures do in our portfolio. So that I really, in many ways, think your comments are very appropriate to George and for this whole group to contemplate where the system is going and the implications of that for the agenda for measure development that you're putting together.
You know, I hope we don't forget about the patients and their families that are kind of moving faster than we are. Observations of daily living. There's folks with Crohn's disease, I just read about this week, are doing some pretty exciting stuff about with smartphones being able to better understand what's going to trigger a crisis or what's going to do things. And I think that we really got to think about how do we get measurement for those folks that are kind of moving without asking for permission from doctors, hospitals, health plans, or NQF.
Janet, I know this is all still in development, but can you talk about how this work and the work of the National Priority Partnership could potentially feed into HHS's charge for a national quality strategy that would include looking at different areas of prioritization?
Sure. Well, we're very much aware that there's a lot of efforts underway within HHS to develop that national strategy, and indeed those national priorities are due to Congress in January. the Secretary has to deliver to Congress in January her plan and the set of priorities. There have been some initial efforts on the part of the HHS leadership to reach out to various groups and begin to get input, and I think we'll see a lot of that over the next month or two, and that's very healthy and very good, trying to get a broad base of input into the whole effort to develop that strategy. The National Priorities Partnership, realizing that this was going to happen, has been working on a report that will soon be delivered to the Secretary to assist with that effort, so they'll have an opportunity to provide input to it. Needless to say, we hope that the Secretary, and I'm sure that she will and the senior staff, will build on all of the various efforts that have been underway, in particular the National Priorities Partnership effort in fashioning that that overall plan. Now, that's in part why this work has been driven to a great extent by the national priorities, as well as other thinking about longitudinal and the episodes of care, but in anticipation of where that plan will likely come out. I mean, I think we don't want to, we can't anticipate exactly where it will come out, but I think we would all probably agree that we'd be surprised if we didn't see many of those critical areas that the National Priorities Partnership identified, because they've been, you know, they're clearly the major gaps, care coordination and more patient-centered care and family engagement and things of that nature. So we're hoping that this agenda that you are developing for measure development will be right on target, but we'll have to keep our eye very closely on those developments, and as it begins to come out, if there's a need to address additional areas, we'll have to move very expeditiously to do that. But in the best of all worlds, you'd be delivering up, I think, a clear agenda here that could be acted on very quickly by HHS to begin to get that measure development work going. And that's our intent, is to give them something that's very, very useful, and so that when the time comes to put dollars out into the field for development, it really goes to those high leverage areas, and we have that well thought out plan. But there's nothing really pretty about all this health reform stuff as it rolls out. It is a little bit of the sausage in the making and a lot of different things going on in parallel, and we just have to keep scanning the environment very carefully and making mid-course corrections so that we kind of keep everything coordinated. But the pace at which these efforts are being undertaken at HHS is extraordinary. I haven't in my couple of decades here in the community seen HHS moving at such an extraordinary pace internally on so many different fronts. So I take my hat off to all of the folks in there who really are pushing this forward, because, boy, health reform just really gave them a heck of a it's going to be a challenge for them. It really piled on the work, but they're doing a wonderful job, and anything we can do to help coordinate and keep all these pieces moving in harmony is I think what our job is.
So one other question I can think of before we let you go is, and maybe this is also for the staff, because I just occurred to me as you were talking, so maybe a little bit unfair to the two of you, since we've last met, the government has decided on what the standard will be for preventive care that qualifies for no copay under the law. And it seems to me that that what relates what could relate to measures, because it de facto defines a set of measures that may or may not be useful in the context of quality. I mean, that's another lens through which to look at that. Mm-hmm. But it certainly does. Are we giving any thought to how that affects the work we've done so far in terms of how it impacts the prioritization that we've done and whether or not there's an opportunity for looking at a composite that of some of those elements or all of them in terms of people being up to date by gender and age for their recommendations, so I think it's the A's and B's of the U.S. Task Force, HRSA, the immunization recommendations of ACIP. I forget the fourth group. There's a fourth group there, too.
George, I think that's an excellent point to make sure that our work here is relevant to what's happening within the federal government. I just hadn't thought through this as completely as I would have wanted to answer this question. But what I would say is I think it's very important, and I can see a section in our report to HHS together with our piece on the population health work that we have done that comments on the connections and implications there. So we'll work with you and the committee on that.
Yeah, I again apologize for raising it. It occurred to me as Janet was talking.
Along those lines, it is a great example of how we have to be very nimble and be able to respond to these opportunities that come along. There are a whole set of them that you can sort of anticipate. Another one is I think there's efforts that are just starting to really gear up and think about what types of information will be needed for those exchanges that are going to be developing at the state level, presumably, in many communities. And I think as that work begins to take shape, it will have implications for sets of measures that we want to have available at the state level, the community level, the system level. And we're going to see many, many examples of that. So to the extent that we can anticipate those, and some of them we can, and we have started to do a fairly systematic review of health reform and the different mandates for implementation of various pieces of that at different points in time. And that does in some ways form a backdrop that may help us to think about which sort of needs are going to be coming in at various points in time and maybe even anticipate some of those moving forward. But this is a great example, and boy, I'd encourage you to dig right into it.
Other questions for Janet? Okay, well, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate that. All right. I think, Melanie, you were going to provide some additional context for us.
Yes.
Organization for us.
Thanks, George, and thank you, Janet. So to provide a bit of context setting, and many of you have seen some of these slides before, what we wanted to do was walk through a little bit of where we've been and then also where we're headed for today. So where we've been, 12 o'clock on this slide is Medicare, and we covered Medicare under the leadership of Tom Valek, Karen Adams, and Wendy Vernon in February and early March, and we prioritized the conditions as well as the gap domains and subdomains. And then this phase of the project, we have focused on child health and population health. Today, we'll be doing a session on HIT meaningful use quality measures, and we have some identified gaps and some slides that were not sent out as part of the PowerPoint, but we have hard copies of those slides for folks. And Helen Burson will be presenting on some of these identified gaps from a report that she and Jonathan Weiner from Hopkins put together for ONC. So that will provide a nice broad brush overview of key gaps in the HIT meaningful use quality measure arena. And those gaps we will ask folks to think through as we prioritize today the final consolidated list that was merged from the work we've done in Medicare, child health, and pop health. Next year, if funding pulls through, we would focus on maternal health and neonatal as well as adults non-Medicare. We would have to do a new call for a committee as this committee's charge ends at the end of this year. And we hope to focus on additional streams based on HHS's additional needs. In the corners of this diagram, we talk about key cross-checks. One is measure developer priorities. And this is very important as we're thinking through gaps. What are the measure developers currently working on? And we had in the July webinar some wonderful presentations from some of the larger measure developers. And Booz Allen, as I'll get to in a later slide, is also doing an environmental scan of other measure developers. In the next corner, we have the integrated framework, and that comprises the NPP as well as the patient-focused episode of care. And that provides a nice cross-check as to key priorities that have already been identified from NQF. On the bottom two, we have the measure gaps that were identified through existing NQF endorsement processes and projects, and Tom had presented some of those gaps in the June meeting. We also have the materials from these various streams on the outside table for folks who may have missed the June meeting. And then finally, community needs, which will be focused more as a part of our proposal for next year's work around public reporting gaps, potentially payment reform gaps, and that sort of areas. This slide, although a rather busy slide, focuses on some of the different phases of the project. So in the purple, we have the Medicare stream. We walk through how we went through the conditions, the BOOS report, the voting exercise, and then the gap domains and subdomains. In green, we have the focus on this phase, which is child health and pop health, and we did similar work. And then the HIT meaningful use gaps, which we'll be focusing on today, along with the consolidated list to get us to our measure development and endorsement agenda. In blue, for next year, we're focusing on potentially maternal health and neonatal, as well as adults non-Medicare. And ideally, at some point of a later phase, we will also then move to the measure concept level. But for now, we're focusing on the measure gap domain and subdomain level. As I mentioned, it's very important as a cross-check to really think through what is in the pipeline of the measure developers. So we have hired Booz Allen to focus on an environmental scan of pipeline performance measures, and the key categories that we were looking in are the NPP priorities, including child health and pop health, and we actually have also asked Booz to start to think through, based on our consolidated list of gap domains and subdomains, where did some of those pipeline measures fall? So we can really see, based on that consolidated list, where measure developers are currently working. And Booz Allen did both interviews with measure developers as well as website searches of key measure developer websites to look for defined search terms. So the committee progress to date, as we mentioned in February, we focused on the Medicare conditions and gap domains and subdomains. In March, we started this phase of the project, and we focused on child health and pop health and some additional streams. In May, we came together for our first webinar of this phase of the project, and we had asked you to do some homework around child health conditions, and we also wanted to note the wonderful work that Christy Bethel had done for us around taking some of the gap domains and subdomains from a child health convening and presenting those to us and providing the data to support how best to do rankings in child health conditions as well as gap domains and subdomains. And then in June, we convened here and we focused on voting around child health conditions and gap domains and subdomains, as well as the following day voting around pop health. And we also would like to thank Peter Briss for his work in teeing up some of the gap domains from a pop health convening that we had done previously. Then in July, we started to set the context for the HIT Meaningful Use Quality Measure Gap Stream. We had Helen Burstyn and Farzad Mostashari, who presented around some of those, and we'll be doing additional presentation today on that area. And we had those presentations from the measure developers as well. And then it brings us to today, where we'll be prioritizing the consolidated list of gap areas, and wanted to thank many of you who turned in your homework, especially many of you who were on vacation and still managed to turn in your homework with regard to prioritizing that voting. On September 23rd, we'll have an informational web meeting to present background on the results of this meeting as well as the process that we took. And that will tee up for a public comment period that will start September 20th. And then that period will go through October 19th, and we'll be seeking out comments from NQF members as well as the public. And then we'll have a draft report to HHS as well as to committee members for their review in November. And I wanted to mention that as things are changing, as George had mentioned and as Janet had mentioned, we will be very mindful of how we can include those pieces into this report to make sure that it's not outdated before we get a chance to get it to HHS. So the next section is on the integrated framework for performance measurement.
I think we should take some questions for you first.
Okay.
Since Nalini has done a terrific job of, again, reviewing where we've been, and it's very complicated. I don't know about the rest of you, but I always appreciate being reoriented to where we are in the process. But I'd like to pause for a few minutes. If you have any questions on what she said, you know, where we are, what we're up to, those kind of questions would be welcome now if anybody needs that to ask anything like that. You're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed?
Hey, George. I was just, I appreciate the overview, very helpful of grounding us again today. It just notes that there may be just one meeting to kind of connect the dots for the members. If there's opportunities to really reach out, we have a series of provider councils, we have others. I think we want, this is such an important part of how this connects all the dots of the work of NQF moving forward, in kind of the same way Janet has provided context to us, and I think as much as we can do to engage the membership would be appreciated.
It's a good comment. Thank you.
I actually have been sitting in on some of the different councils, and I haven't probably made my way to all of them yet, but providing answers and also presenting a little bit about the project per the request of different chairs of the councils. And I know Tom and I were also thinking of presenting to the CSAC in the fall, and then also thinking through with our communications folks some of the different member calls and updates. That's a wonderful suggestion. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right. Let's move forward then. So at this point, we're going to have Karen set some context here for our integrated framework.
Great. Thanks, George. And you know, the earlier conversation, George, where you both you and Janet challenged us in regards to as we think about our measure development endorsement agenda and how we have to think of that in the, through the lens of meaningful use and moving towards more patient-centric type of things such as PHR and collecting functional status. It's all perfect setup for this. And Nikki, thanks so much for trying to connect the dots, too, to the strategy and what the MPP is doing, because a lot of what I want to share now as we come full circle, because much of this we used as our early context setting, really starts to play that out. So I think this conversation actually already started before this brief presentation. But nonetheless, I think I'd like to just, as I mentioned, take us full circle. So when we first started this project, we really wanted to build on prior work as we started to identify what some critical gaps would be. And so, you know, we started looking at the early work of the IOM, and of course, George, you had led the early priority setting there, and of course, Greg and others around the table were very involved with that, and we looked to the work of many of you around the table. And, you know, how do we start setting this context around gaps and the prior work so we could ground ourselves in other what came before us and certainly set that context. And then we looked to the work of the National Priority Partnership, which, of course, many of you are members, and we, as you see on the slide, came up with these six cross-cutting areas. And George, as you spoke to moving towards more complex type of measures and around composites, when we think of the earlier work, which really we were asked to set 20 high-impact conditions as we did for Medicare, that group pushed forward around the cross-cutting early on around care coordination. And now we see our list is all cross-cutting and applicable across conditions. So that's the moving forward as well. And when I stepped back and looked at all the domains and kind of had some quiet time with your work, you can see how this is all starting to converge. So, Nikki, I think your question really starts to come to life here too. And then as we start to look at care more longitudinally over a patient episode or over a trajectory of illness, as we start to look more towards outcomes and, of course, cost, we started to see emerging or an integration occurring in our work. And so as we looked at the cross-cutting areas in National Priorities Partnership, as well as the earlier work that was led by Elliot Fisher and Kevin Weiss around the patient-focused episode of care, and with work with the National Priorities Partnership, we're seeing an integrated framework emerge that we'd like to share. And that's our next slide, please. And for those of you, of course, who serve on the MPP, we have, as Janet mentioned, we have begun drafting our recommendations to the Secretary. This is needed quite rapidly, as you know, since January 1st, the strategy has to be laid out. And so our group has been thinking about this integrated framework where we look at the episode of care, certainly importantly starting with the population of risk, and that bubble's big for a reason. And George, I think the thing that you raised around legislation and how legislation has played out around population health and how we have pushed that much broader, particularly when we think beyond preventive care, of course, being very critical, but ensuring that you get that age and sex appropriate and thinking that more around a composite. And also our group has pushed further around wellness and wellness in the community and a more community index of health, which we're not quite seeing played out just yet in the legislation. So as we do this mapping for the report, as Tom suggested, I think there's a lot of opportunities with the thinking of this group and the domains that we've identified, as well as the National Priorities Partnership, around population health and population at risk and how we play that out and that intersection with delivery system and pushing out further into public health. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. We have done a mapping of the legislation to the priorities, and I can share with you around the population health as well as the group where that's going. But I think that that's really a important point that you raised. And I noticed when I looked at your domain rankings that in subdomains you rank population health high. They're in the top quartile around preventive services, healthy lifestyle behaviors, and then, of course, around wellness. And Gareth and I were speaking around how, you know, this emphasis on functional status and quality of life, which many would put into the wellness. But then with the domains, the population health ranked low. So I think there's some reconciling, not only for us, but also as we move forward in the era of health reform and where legislation is taking us, how we play that out. So allow me a little editorializing on that, but that conversation just really struck me as I reviewed the legislation. So as we move along this trajectory, and of course this is a simplification because certainly we know if, as you look at this through the lens as we have thus far with AMI and low back pain and cancer and substance abuse and others, diabetes, how do you condense it into three bubbles? But we did for simplicity because we hear our messaging is very complex, so we tried to simplify this. So you have your evaluation and management, and here's very importantly where care coordination comes in, these transitions of care as you move from evaluation and management into your follow-up, and then patient and family engagement, and of course safety across our overuse, and certainly we don't want to forget the priority area around palliative care and, you know, depending on trajectory when that would be started. So as you look at these six priority areas interfaced with this episode of care, and as we look at the important outputs of this around patient-focused outcomes, which the group very much focused on and which our domains focus on, particularly around functional status, and as we look at cost of care, these all figured prominently. So this is what is evolving. This is the thinking and evolving of the National Priorities Partnership. That report is still with the partners for comment, so we weren't able to share it yet today. But I think this group actually, you identified an important category, which you called healthcare and public health system infrastructure. And the Priority Partnership also, they called it infrastructure supports. And so I think your work is reinforcing that work and that thinking too, and have actually expanded some of the priorities looking at that infrastructure supportive as you've defined it, which also built on the recent IOM report that not only recommended the national priorities for how we look at the national healthcare qualities and disparities reports moving forward, but also that beyond these six priorities, we should look at infrastructure supports as well as access. And so the partners are looking to that as well. And I know not only your domain around infrastructure, but there have been discussions here around access. So we're moving in that direction, too, where access would be overarching. The six priorities across the episode would be kind of the core work, and then these key infrastructure supports, including HIT, but, you know, very importantly, the infrastructure supports you need for rapid knowledge dissemination, for quality improvement, and as well as workforce and things that have come up through your discussion. So this is where we have been evolving, and as we look at this work and where we've landed, there's a lot of connecting the dots, Nikki, as you've already helped us do, and synergy. Your top domains were around care coordination and resource use, which figures very prominently, and your subdomain top domains were around functional status and appropriateness and efficiency. So, and I mentioned the infrastructure supports. So I do think that as I look at the domain, since access has been figuring prominently as the group moves forward, we might want to think about that.
I was just, in looking at the framework, do the overuse and patient and family engagement boxes extend through follow-up care?
They do. You know, really, there's none of these are mutually exclusive. And I think you bring up a very important point because we know that there's an interrelationship between patient and family engagement, at least some of the work that's been shown at Dartmouth with Jim Weinstein around patients who do engage in a shared decision-making process often do select less invasive or procedures. So I think that these priorities do interconnect, and it's hard to, you know, we were trying to put forth a simple type of representation here, but certainly you could argue that all of these extend across the episode. What we were trying to do is to show at these where they overlap and you see the tails, like for care coordination, certainly as you go from different settings, that would become relevant, and that you wanted to engage and ensure that you had patient and family preferences up front, and particularly as you went through transitions. But I still find it a complicated diagram. We welcome any suggestions you might have.
Yeah, just along that point, as you realize that overuse extends across the entire episode, both directions, as well as the need for patient and family engagement across both. Mm-hmm. Both. Nikki.
So I know this has gone through a long development, and so I appreciate all the work that's gone into it, but a couple of comments that, not to make it too much more complicated, because I know you're trying to be simple, but it still appears that we're using a disease-specific paradigm, and a lot of what we've talked about in this group is getting beyond a disease-specific paradigm. And I also know that HHS and their development of their quality plan, you know, are trying to think of a life cycle approach. Mm-hmm. Or I don't, the buzzword changes every other day, but, you know, kind of thinking more longitudinally, people with multiple conditions, what they need as children versus adolescent versus adulthood. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if you make this multidimensional or more longitudinal. Or
it's becoming a Rubik's Cube. But
yeah.
It's,
yeah. You know, and particularly when we talked about the child issues, child health issues, it was hard. This paradigm was difficult because it's not a clinical episode begins and then you begin treatment. It's a developmental trajectory. So you have a big challenge.
Nikki, this is fabulous feedback, because one thing I want to share is that we do under HHS have a contract where we're working on how do we adapt this to multiple chronic conditions. And certainly there are people around this table who served on the early work, and George and Tom also were on the committee, as well as others, that, you know, it was a starting point just to start with a condition by condition. We know there's so many limitations, and how do you apply this to broader populations and over time? And as you're saying, how do you apply this? You know, I'd love to see this played out through a developmental lens, through child health, and that would need to be done. So this is very well taken, because to try to place something out linearly and unidimensionally, and you're raising some very important, because most of our patients, whether they're from Medicare populations or Medicaid populations or across, don't have one condition that follows this neat trajectory.
Yeah, let me just add to your comment. I think I was at, before I came yesterday, I was attended a 35-year anniversary for one of our employees who was who is actually now the key person in terms of our internal measurement, quality measurement, production, if you will, and development at Health Partners. And as the managers sort of went back over her 35 years, obviously it spanned a number of generations of development of our organization. And the entire life of our organization is 50 years. So, you know, she's seen most of that history. But the one thing that struck me very specifically was the fact that 16 years ago, when we began producing our clinical indicators report for the system, we were looking at things like mammography rates, which were like, my memory serves me, in the 50 to 60% range, immunization rates, which were similarly abysmal when we first started measuring those things, thinking about them. And now they're off the charts. In fact, our complex measure for everybody up to date in some of our clinics is at 70 or 80%. And that's not just one measure, but it's multiple measures by age and gender. And when you think about just focusing on one topic as opposed to many topics by age and gender for what people needs and the impact that may have in terms of appropriate screening for disease, for example. I mean, that those are not only changes in terms of performance longitudinally by one paradigm, but going through several paradigms, as was laid out in her career. What my concern is that as we think about the future, and particularly now with legislation, that we don't hardwire into it this generation of thinking about quality measurement. And still, you know, in the next 10 years, and this was going back, you know, if we've gone through a couple generations in 16 years, the next 10 years we have a way of reflecting in this report the need to think about how we're thinking about performance and guidelines and processes, especially with the opportunity for HIT. You know, I think some of us are still concerned that we were given these conditions by CMS. We were given conditions. We didn't have any conversation at that point. And I think your report is an opportunity to, and this section of it is an opportunity to reflect some of these other thoughts that we've had along the way. Yeah, Rhonda, and then John.
I want to take this a little further in terms of maybe where Nikki was going. As I look at this drawing, I'm a little bit bothered by some of the terminology that's used. For example, evaluation and initial management really kind of implies an acute approach to illness, and then follow-up care kind of, again, a limited approach. And when I think about, I'm sorry?
Very much a medical
claim. Yeah, very much so, and I'm wondering, one of the things that's kind of missing here, but kind of implied by patient and family engagement, is at some point in time, we would hope that the patient takes a very active role in managing themselves, and I would hope in the future that's where we're going, where we give them more information as they become experts at managing themselves. And this just doesn't quite get that. I know this is complex to do, so
no, it's good.
I just want to add that as just a perspective to think about.
Yeah, as you all remember, I represent long-term and post-acute care. And chronic care is what we take care of. So, I mean, so much of the legislation currently and quality measures, as we've said, are disease management type of things. They're also built on episodic care, which really hospitals only see people for 3 to 5 days and doctors maybe for an hour a year, where in long-term post-acute care, we see people for days, months, and years and treat chronic care. And so much of what's been done, and why I really encouraged Janet to include long-term post-acute care, is because that's what longitudinal care really is. And if we keep looking at everything from an episodic point of view, we really don't get that chronic care. And I know it's complex, but that's really what the answer is, because that's preventative medicine, proactive medicine, and to keep episodic care from really happening is really, I think, the point of the whole reform and HIT.
These are very excellent points. These are almost conceptual gaps that need to be filled in the development process, not just by the framework we've set up by this acute care paradigm, medical paradigm, you know, both your point, Rhonda's point, Nikki's point.
It's that episodic thing that we keep looking at when it's not really episodic for the future.
Yeah. Other comments? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, you're next. I'll get you next.
Just to build on what everybody's saying, but what I'm really struck with when I see integrated framework is the idea that really the person in the family should be at the center, and then all the bubbles come out. It's just a different way of organizing the integrated framework, because I think that's what many of us are trying to get to, beyond just patient and family engagement. And just to reinforce what Nikki was saying with people with multiple chronic conditions, and also what you were saying, that what's not in here is recognition of community and social supports that are critically important to how people and their families live every day with their multiple chronic conditions. So.
Yes. So I think the challenge is you were trying to figure out how to put the domains somehow on this picture, and maybe that may or may not be the right approach, but I think what we're grappling with is short-term versus long-term, and it's not going to help HHS for us to have all these great conceptual thoughts because they want to change reimbursement systems. I think this is a good diagram of sort of saying we're starting to transition, and sort of here's what we're comfortable with now. We need another diagram that's going to basically say 10 years from now, where are we incorporating all these comments? Because I agree with everything that's being said, but that's not where we are right now. So I think if you had a comparable diagram saying here's the transition, I think that might help.
Well, the diagram
we're building
itself,
on your Gretzky thing that we did before. Yeah. Look where the putt's going to go. Put that diagram right out so we at least know what we think we're heading for.
But this diagram itself actually comes from some NQF committee work on episodes of care, which in itself was a concept embedded, in a care model kind of paradigm. Is that the case, Karen?
Right. So this earlier model came from a committee that was asked to develop a measurement framework. So see, we have some limitation here, too, because we're really beyond measure. You know, it's hard just to keep this. But anyhow, it's actually a measurement framework for evaluating efficiency, which the committee defined as quality and cost. And so I think as this work has evolved and the work of the MPP, and particularly as we move into the multiple chronic conditions, this feedback is very helpful as we conceptualize this further. And I agree, you know, this was a starting point. This was a way to start to capture, I think, some of the early work around the IOM that identified measure gaps around population health, around longitudinal measurement, around pushing around patient and family outcomes, around bringing the family into the picture. You know, so this was, it continues to evolve. So this feedback is terrific. And I really like the idea of kind of pushing current state, and this pushed it a little, and how do we push it out further? Yeah.
Other comments for Karen?
I might just say this is sort of like a Rorschach diagram. Anyone see the microphone, Sean?
Sorry. This seems like a Rorschach diagram. Everybody's seeing in it exactly what they want or don't want to see and what's doing it. I think it's a terrific conceptual framework. I mean, people... it may not fit well a very acute episode of care, but clearly people at some point have a starting point of a disease process. There's an opportunity to engage themselves in understanding the disease and choosing and selecting therapies. There's a need to transition to a long-term management strategy for that disease. You know, and there's no sort of clear time scale here. And, for starting to think about what happens in maintaining health or in dealing with diseases that occurs. The population at risk brings out the preventative, opportunities, and you have to think about interventions at the population level before disease comes on separately from these other things. And all of these domains clearly traverse the entire thing. They've sort of emphasized where the peak, if you could imagine a Gaussian distribution of concentrated effort for that domain might be. But, as a starting point to how to think about it, I just hate to see us denigrate this sort of huge effort that's gone on when, I'm not grasping exactly what's wrong with sort of thinking in concrete terms when you have to start to operationalize things, an approach like this.
Yeah, I don't think that's the intent at all. I think this has been a very useful diagram for us. I think it's the reason we've shown it. But I think that also, Karen making this presentation at this particular point in the agenda gives us the opportunity to make suggestions and realize that from the many perspectives represented in this group, it doesn't quite serve all the needs. And I think that also, this diagram's been around for a few years. I think it also, and many of these things need updating or modification as our collective thinking moves along. So I think this is a very useful conversation. It's not a referendum on the diagram or meant to denigrate, this particular work. But I think it's very helpful for the committee, particularly since we've been through this prioritization work, to reflect a little bit, and Karen's giving us that opportunity, on how we might convey these concepts a little bit more comprehensive or meaningful fashion or to different audiences or to respond to the different, very excellent points that I think have been made by John and Rhonda and Nikki and others in this conversation. John?
Giving something that happened to me the other day, our head of director of nursing came up to me and said, John, because we are Golden Living, will have longitudinal record because of what we invest in our infrastructure. She said, John, the nurses don't understand this. And I said, I told you that 2 years ago, they're looking at things episodically. They have longitudinal in their head. But once you get a longitudinal EHR or an EMR that's digitized, they've got to change their way of thinking. They got to become more dynamic, proactive, and things like that. And I think we've mentioned numerous times, it's the longitudinal care over the complete spectrum of care of somebody and their family and all that, which is really the future and how people look at information differently than what they have looked at in the past. That's going to take an educational process for it. But I think that longitudinal and chronic care are the main things.
I know in any of our conversations, some of us have a tendency to speak more than others, and others of us have a tendency not to speak as much. But so I'd like to encourage anybody who hasn't spoken already, if they have a comment to make or reflection, or on the phone.
Can you hear me?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Fred Grover. I'm on a call, George. I agree with, I mean, all of this is important discussion, but I really do agree with the last comment. The patient looking at them longitudinally is where we need to focus. And as a surgeon, obviously, I'm an episodic type practitioner, but that's, we need to evaluate from the beginning to the end of these patients. And I think the real opportunity is how we do develop HIT in this country and personalized patient records, and how we share those, and how all of this can play into that so that we integrate this data across all these domains and subdomains and put it at the patient level.
Good comment, Fred, and you remind me that when we do our diagrams, they have to appeal to surgeons, to cardiologists, to behavioral health people, to nursing home folks, to people in long-term care, to the folks who are patient advocates. I mean, we've got a lot of perspectives to satisfy and make useful on our diagrams. Other people on the phone in particular?
Star 1 if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment to have your line opened. Star 1.
While we're waiting for that, Dale?
So, to Fred's point and yours, George, I also think the model is somewhat reasonable, primarily because, you know, so we all agree that population health, longitudinal care are really important. We currently have a system, though, that pays in silos, and until we really start seeing a greater reform of the health system, the payment models and other things, I think it's tough to think about a measurement strategy, a prioritization strategy, until we've really reformed the entire system, and we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, and again, I don't think this is a referendum on how we look at this. We're not trying to choose one perspective or another, Dale. So I think we're trying to accommodate a broad range of perspectives that are represented in this group. So I don't want us to get into – I think this serves that need very well, as you mentioned, as Fred's mentioned, as John's mentioned before. But I don't want us to get into a one perspective versus another. I want to see us try to figure out how we address some of these other issues as well, alongside of the issues that we're looking at as well. So, yep.
Yeah, I like the diagram, and I agree with John. This gives me a concept about the thought that came to mind is, of all the people we have represented here, we don't have medical students. And seems to me something that should be much more integrated into medical school curriculum. I don't know whether it is or not. I know the schools I'm involved with, it's not. Curriculum time is a big issue. Faculty is very, very jealous of that. But I think if you use this as a presentation for early medical students, who are just beginning, first and second year. I did a humanism project at the Department of Health for 3 years, having a group of medical students in at the summertime who went to long-term care facilities and had interviews with staff and residents, went to the FQHCs, talked to patients to try and define what, in fact, humanism was, develop a tool to try and evaluate it, measure it. You got answers and a really broad perspective from them that was not the same as individuals who'd been in the field for a long time. So I would advocate for having more young students involved with this development process as well.
good comment. I'm tempted to build on it since I've spent this past month focusing on education. But I think your comment is well taken. I wonder whether the focus needs to be on the faculty and the people later in training, though, because it seems to be that focus tends to rapidly evaluate from those early medical students, unfortunately. So go ahead, John.
I don't want to talk too much, but I wanted to say something on payment methods. There's a misconception about nursing homes, about we want to keep people in nursing homes. And I had a little discussion with somebody from one of the other states about that because she was on my case about that. And I said, do you know how we get paid in nursing homes? We get paid on a census model, not a throughput model. We have to keep the census up over 90% in order not to lose money in that. We don't want people to stay in nursing homes. And one population that's out there we never talk about are those people on Medicaid who get room and board in a nursing home where they don't get it anyplace else. And they are probably the poor people of the country, and we don't ever talk about them as sort of hear no evil, see no evil type thing. And they should not, probably they don't need 24/7 care of a high-skilled nursing facility. And nobody that I can see is, well, I see it a little bit lately, is addressing that population of people and where they should be. And they probably should, many of them, not be in a nursing home.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, I was just going to say, I actually like this diagram more than I dislike it, and so therefore I quite like it. I actually find it useful. I think it's quite a big simplification, but a useful simplification, because I can see this as being a basis for lots of, I can see lots of kind of blue bubbles, if you like, growing off of this for both the same patient and probably for, you know, the same population. And even that pink bubble on the right-hand side kind of being a kind of everlasting ellipse, if you like, or a very long ellipse. So I can see in my mind, I think this is a very useful starting sort of model, but I can also see these little other things making it much more complicated, which is probably the reality. But I think having it simply laid out like this actually provides a really good basis. So I quite like this.
Those may have been more feedback than you wanted, Karen. On the phone, let's make sure that we give people an opportunity to comment. An operator, if there's a way you can offer an opportunity to the public to comment at this point.
Again, that is star one if you'd like to pose a question or make a comment over the telephone. And at this time, no one has signaled.
I was going to say, I agree with everything that's been said. I love the idea of this kind of being a starting point and then having something that overlays on top of it that kind of moves in forward thinking. But I think for the use of this group, the only thing that is a nit that kind of gets at me is, you know, I think we should be careful about how we call things out. And when I see under the evaluation and initial management, the only thing underneath there is overuse. In the context of cost efficiency, that might make sense. But I think in our broader strategy, we should be careful not to just look at overuse and call out overuse. It is underuse, misuse, total appropriateness of care that I think we're trying to achieve, and I think as a quick hit, that could maybe fix something for me.
Very good point. Other comments? Looks like we're...
I don't know whether this is appropriate time, but where do we work in access of care for the general population, access for minorities or economically disadvantaged or those with pre-existing disease, so forth and so on?
Karen, do you have a comment?
So, George, you're right. We did need this model to be updated. And, of course, we have done this with the MPP with the report that I had mentioned to you that now is currently with the group for comment. And so, and as building on the recent IRM report that advised the National Healthcare Quality Reports that access should be a priority area, and the MPP has concurred with that. So our more modern diagram, I would say, once, of course, it goes through the proper process, does include access as an overarching priority and domain. And I think, Gareth and Anna, as you were talking about, as we play out these different areas or different populations, for example, as we play out for multiple chronic conditions, as we played out, you mentioned an eclipse. For our diabetes, we actually did an eclipse with that follow-up care. So as things get played out, the model certainly morphs and gets customized. But I do think that, you know, as Fred's suggesting, as both the IOM report and as our prior meeting with the MPP, we are elevating access, but importantly, access to high-quality care, because as we know, entry is a first step, but it's not a guarantee. And, of course, Nikki, you've done a lot of that work, too. So I say that humbly in your presence, but we know that. So, but certainly getting in is important, but we also want to ensure, and the MPP was quite strong in that conviction.
I think we're ready to take our break for 15 minutes, and then we'll get out down to work. So it's a little past by my watch, so 15 minutes from now, which would be 25 past by my watch. We'll come back together. Well, by my watch, we've had our 15 minutes. By their watch, we've never. They never do. We've actually had 16 minutes by my watch. So I'm wondering if we can regather around the table. So, John, I need your attention. Nalini, I need your help.